Welcome to the Planting Wildflowers podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Leonardis. I'm an entrepreneur, wife, mom, and stepmom. I'm super interested in people and perspectives, and I love how a good conversation can leave you feeling empowered, sometimes even pique your curiosity to learn and grow. Mostly, though, I love how really listening to one another opens up limitless opportunities for that beautiful sense of connection and community that we all love. Thanks for tuning in. Let's be inspired. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Planting Wildflowers podcast. I'm so glad that we're back together. I have a beautiful guest all the way from India with us today. She's originally from London, Ontario, same kind of space as me. However, she's joining us from across the world, literally. My friend Zareen Barda is joining us today, and I couldn't be more excited about this conversation because I was just saying to her, we could have a five-part series with Zareen because she's one of those women who are so deeply involved in so many different beautiful projects. They're all interwoven, but my goodness, she is an excellent, excellent resource in so many different capacities. I'm thrilled that you're going to get a chance to become acquainted with her, and it's very likely that you're going to want to stay connected to the work that Zareen Barda is doing. She is a wonderful human being. Let me tell you just a little bit about her before I allow her, in her own words, to share with us what she's all about. First of all, Zareen is a certified holistic health coach. She's an essential oils educator. She's a yoga instructor with 500 hours. Guys, that's a big deal. 500 hours under her belt. She's a mom of three beautiful children. She's an engineer. She's a lover of food. She's a hustler for causes she's passionate about. And she's an entrepreneur. In 2009, she actually decided to completely pivot careers and shift from a 15-year automotive career to follow her purpose and her path. We're so glad that you did that, Zareen. She did that to empower others to take control of their own health using natural alternatives. She's been an avid essential oil user for quite a long time now, way back to 2014, and she draws from all of her experiences and education to share the knowledge she has with others. Aside from the essential oils work that she does, she is really passionate and really understands that this time in her life is time for community. This is where she gives back. She does this through founding a clean and green charitable trust, which assists the village she lives in with cleanup initiatives. I can't wait to talk about this. So it's all about cleanup initiatives, waste management solutions, and planning. She's all about making it happen. Her mantra in life is so beautiful. It is lead with light, build with love, and grow with gratitude. She believes that there is nothing more soul-filling than that. Zareen, I am so excited to have you on the show today. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you, Rebecca. It's a pleasure. I'm so excited to be here.
We have been friends for quite a number of years now, and it's all tied back to this beautiful work in natural health. So I am beyond grateful that we're able to spend this time chatting about that today. I wonder in your own words, I know I've just given everybody the lowdown on what you're all about, but maybe in your own words, tell us a little bit more, give us some color around some of the things that you're up to, or maybe what it's like being in India right now. Give us some flavor for what's happening with you.
Well, I guess in comparison to what a lot of people are probably experiencing is we are still experiencing a lot of freedom in the village that we're at, where we probably haven't worn masks as much as everyone else around the world. And we're so grateful for being able to do that just because of where we're at for the fresh air. We're right by the water and it is an amazing opportunity. And that's one of the biggest things is as I've been in India for 10 years, It has had its definite ups and downs, especially when you're trying to grow businesses and the cultures are completely different. But one of the biggest things that's always drawn me to India has been the culture, the religion, because even as younger children, we used to come back every year, every couple of years to India for the fire temples. And where I'm at right now, the village, for the clean air, the freshness, and just everything around it here, the surrounding. So it's a beautiful place to be while still kind of being rooted to nature as closely as possible.
Oh, that is so beautiful. India is, when we're able to travel again, it is such a high priority for me to visit. One, because you're there. Two, because I have always wanted to experience the culture as you're describing it. I picture there's just so much history and there's so much depth to the religious beliefs and the customs and the everything about it is very, it's just beautiful to me. So I'm so glad that you took us in that direction and gave us a little bit of detail on what that's like. I hope that more of us have that opportunity, like you said, to experience the freshness and the freedoms that you just described. That is that seems to be a rarity these days. So thank you for reminding us that that is in fact a possibility around the world. I really love knowing that. Zareen, can you, we're going to start things off with just you giving us a little bit of background about how you are in the place you're in right now. I love the fact that you shared with us how it came to be that you're in India, but how is it that you shifted your life so massively from a career in automotive to this natural health? They don't seem to be aligned with one another, and yet, excuse me, somehow you find yourself in this beautiful space. And I'm a firm believer in everything you've done in the past has led you to where you're meant to be. So I know that there is a connection here, but I wonder if you would be so kind as to share with us the life experience or experiences that caused you to have this major pivot in your life. I know that some of it is not easy to speak of. You experienced tragedy, which prompted some of this pivot in your life. I wonder if you could just share with us just a little bit of that.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess 2007 was probably like the biggest pivot where I did experience a deep tragedy where I had someone very close to me pass away. And from there, that kind of led me to yoga because we'd always done athletics throughout our life growing up. It was always like baseball, basketball, soccer, some sort of sport. However, it wasn't as much yoga or the meditation aspect of mantras. Like we always had prayers at home, but it wasn't in the sense of like asanas, I guess, or restorative. So that's where that led me to a yoga studio in the US. So I was living in Michigan at that time for about 5 years before I moved to India, where the instructor that I was introduced to or that I found or came across, I guess, did a lot more heart opening, heart work, and different focuses for different poses that opened up your heart. And that's basically what had drawn me into yoga, was to basically heal my heart and to heal my soul and just heal myself. And that's kind of where there's always a time and place for everything. And I believe that you're always put on the path that you need to be, whether you realize it in that moment or not, but it's something that it's put there for you. And it may take you a couple years, or you may never even realize why you were on there, but that's kind of what our goal is to find out why we're here and why the path that we're given is actually given to us. So that's kind of where my yoga journey began. And then from there, I had actually the yoga teacher. I then went to another studio because I moved to another town in Michigan again. And from there, the instructor that I had was actually from India, and he was an engineer who left engineering to become a full-time yogi. Mm-hmm. And with that, that's who I had taken my first 200-hour course through. And that was in 2009 and 2010. So that's when I became an RYT 200. So that's kind of the journey that took me to health and wellness. But I guess growing up, my parents never really boxed us into, okay, this is your career, this is your path. You can't really have any other experiences or be artsy at the same time. Because I remember in grade 8, I won like an arts award, even though my main focus was like maths and sciences, and those were my fortes. And I think even my parents were shocked because my older sister is like an artist and my younger sister was like musically talented. So they were like, oh, well, where did you come from? Kind of where it's like complete sciences and then a total pivot for arts. And that's kind of where I love everything. Like there's so many different things that you can intertwine and work together, where just because you're an engineer doesn't mean you can't be well-spoken. And that doesn't mean you can't be into arts or into other cultural, like finer cultural areas. So I think it just depends on who you surround yourself with and the people that you grow with. So that's kind of where that next step happened. But the biggest thing was, I guess, what that tragedy taught me was open your eyes and open your mind to everything and all the possibilities that are there. Because previously I would get like a lot of anxiety, like if I had exams or different things coming up, where after that, I just didn't care. Like it was to the point where I could do things without having that anxiety or having like that after effect of getting like an upset stomach or something because of like anxiousness, where it was just that anxiety just kind of disappeared. And I was like living life fully to a certain extent. And that's kind of where, if you ask any of my siblings or ask any of my friends, I would probably be the last person that they would have ever expected me to move to India. So
oh, really?
Yeah. Cause like, I am not into Bollywood movies. I'm not into like Indian anything. Like even after living in India for like 10, 11 years, I have maybe seen a couple Bollywood movies. I don't really follow any of the things. Even my husband's like, oh, you've been here for so many years and you don't even know all the holidays that happen here. And it's like, yeah, I just kind of live in my own little world, I guess. But it is what it is. So I'm still probably like the least person that you might expect in India. Like I haven't really changed in that perspective, but I've adapted to the cultures and the people around me. But it is very different. So yeah, so I moved to India in 2010 and I was still working as an engineer. So the company that I'd been working for offered me an opportunity to take care of their Asia Pacific business operations. And that was such a blessing because I did that from home. So I was still living in the village and I would travel as needed wherever I needed to go. And it was kind of like how everyone has now realized that working from home is something that is possible for everyone to do. Yeah. It was something I've been doing for so many years before. And it was awesome in a certain sense, but also I know whenever I would go back to the US, I miss that work-life balance because when you check out at 5 o'clock, you're done at 5 o'clock. Whereas when you're working from home, it never really shuts off or shuts down. So that's one of the biggest struggles that even now, today I have, is that work-life balance, finding I need to shut down when I need to turn off. Yeah. Because yeah, I think that's like a lot of people face that, where when you are working from home, it's like sometimes your boundaries just slide. So that's one of the biggest things that I've been working on and I know I need to work on more. But yeah, that's kind of how it led me to this. And then for the past, I would say, since about 2014, so when I had my son, I had met you in 2013 through Rebirth and through doTERRA. And that was kind of one of the biggest things that changed my life. I know Rebirth, which is like a mom's resource center in London, Ontario, that played such a big impact in my life because I know after I had my son, there were so many tears like that went along with postpartum, with breastfeeding and the difficulties of it. And I know like if I didn't have like the lactation consultant that came home to help me, and if I didn't have the moms at Rebirth, things could have turned out a lot differently postpartum for breastfeeding and the relationships and stuff. So I know having that bonding and those resources and those women being so open with sharing their experiences, as well as I guess, public breastfeeding also changed my perspective hugely. And that's kind of where my work today is now primarily focused, with moms throughout pregnancy, birthing, postpartum, where in India, the stigma is still there where the women are second. The women don't really have much say or much input, as well as they're very much influenced by maybe their primary care providers or their husbands or their families, where I want them to be able to find their voices and be able to take control of their births and take control of their lives, whether it be through natural birth or through a hospital birth. Like, either way is perfectly okay. It's just that they should be being able to make the decisions for themselves without that fear and without that judgment, which I think was so amazing. The blessings that I had being able to deliver in Canada and having an amazing support system there. That's one of the things that I've had a lot of difficulty with in India, because I know I've had multiple miscarriages where the first one was in India, which happened like on a Friday night. And by the time, like, I was bleeding, by the time I lost the baby, my mom had already flown in from Canada and was here to support me because the hospitals weren't open. And they were like, oh, well, you'll have to wait till Monday to come in and stuff. And it's like, after that experience, like, I didn't want to, my hospital experiences in India were so tragic that I was like, I can't do this. I can't do it over here. And I know things have changed over the years and things have definitely improved. But at the same time, I don't see it at the stages where I would like mothers to be exposing themselves to, I guess, in that perspective, because there's still a lot of complications and contradictions that still happen, regardless, all over the world, I think. But I think more so in India, based off of the experiences that I've also had. And that's kind of where I want to be this voice or this support for women to be able to do that. And I know over the years, I found such amazing network of women in India that are like doulas, naturopaths, Ayurvedic doctors that are all wanting to do the same things for moms and support them along that journey. So I think it's just finding and building those relationships that's so important. But I think we've completely deviated. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at right now, where I love like food, like the holistic food. I love like healthy food. And that's like one of the biggest things where, again, in the village, like 10 years ago, there was no Amazon. There weren't really any imported vegetables or fruits that I was used to eating on a regular basis, whereas now everything is more readily available. And a lot more resources are there. So that's kind of the biggest thing that I have seen also change in India, where things have been progressing, but it would be nice for us to do our part and help them progress in the way that we want to see it change.
Serene, you just, my goodness, you are a fabulous person. You said so many things that really connected with me there. First of all, I need to come back to this idea of village, because I think the term village means something here in North America and means something slightly different in India. I think you're talking about a literal village, whereas sometimes we consider village a concept, like it takes a village to do something, but we don't technically live in a village per se. So I want to come back to that in a moment, but I also love the fact that you spoke about boundaries. And I also love, beyond belief, the commitment you have to supporting women in finding their voice, particularly when it comes to having a voice about the way they're bringing life into this world. I find this to be the most profound thing that you're doing. I mean, your experiences have obviously shaped you, but I believe that this is also something that, I mean, you're placed here for this reason, and the experiences have just sort of molded you to be what you are right now. I wonder, can you elaborate, what specifically are you doing? I know you've mentioned several wonderful connections, and I love the idea of building connections with women who are specialists, like you mentioned, naturopath and doulas and other specialties. But what are you specifically doing in your natural health business that supports women in gaining access to that voice that you speak of? Because I think this is maybe the most important work.
Yeah. So just recently I started a company called The Belly and Beyond, which is there to support women throughout those three phases. So based off of the experiences that I have, I do coaching with nutrition, and integrating nutrition that is specific to the mom, depending on whatever phase she's in and what she's going through. Then I also integrate the essential oils education, because that's such a huge part of natural healthcare and finding natural alternatives to support yourself. And with that, I have taken like specific courses for, so how to use essential oils safely through because it can be completely different than you would use them on a regular day-to-day basis. Sure. And then for the yoga and movement aspect, I've done, I'm also like an RPYT. So a prenatal postnatal yoga teacher. So with that, that's where movement and exercise is such a big part of the bonding that the mother has with the baby, because I know women these days when they're pregnant, sometimes they're so busy with so many other things that just even having like 30 minutes or an hour of like an asana class or a yoga practice where it just helps build that connection. Because I know throughout my pregnancies, like for my sons, like the first like 41 weeks, I basically did yoga up until I delivered him, where with my twins, it was like at like 30 weeks, I was like, I can't bend over. So I was like, I'm done. But restorative yoga classes, especially when during pregnancy, it just gives you like that extra bonding with your baby. And it's just a beautiful time for you to just kind of take that time and quiet. And that's why, like, even postpartum, one of the biggest things is like, whether you're bottle feeding a baby or whether you're breastfeeding a baby, I love that time afterwards, because like you get to stop doing whatever you're doing and get like 5 or 10 minutes to yourself and just with your little ones. And you don't always think about it like that, but it's a nice place to bond and just stop and like put your feet up and wind down a little bit. And that's what the movement and the yoga can also provide, where it doesn't have to be something strenuous that they're doing. It could be more relaxing, where they're just sitting down and putting a hand over their belly and their heart and focusing and putting in loving intentions to their baby. Because that's the biggest thing, is we're creating something in our wombs that we don't always realize how our environments and how our surroundings can affect the baby, whether we're angry or whether we're in a negative energy atmosphere, that all affects them. So even just putting in that positive energy and kind of instilling that in them kind of grounds them and brings them back, and they feel that love through you.
Oh, that gave me absolute chills. I believe so deeply in what you've said. I know because of our current health situation, I've been spending some time getting familiar with germ theory and terrain theory. And you immediately made me think of terrain theory and how the environment that you provide for anything that's in growth mode, even, you know, we're talking about a baby in a womb, is in growth mode. And if you provide a nurturing environment, the result of that is a really profound, healthy, well-adjusted being. And I think that this work that you're doing is really fantastic. It must be super rewarding at the same time.
It is. It's definitely nice to have like the feedback from the moms, but it's nice, because I think all of the experiences that I've had that have been shared with me, it's like a way to just pay it forward.
Yeah. And what I also take from this is that you're providing something that might not be considered by all new moms. And that is that your physical health is something that is incredibly important to take care of, you know, pre and postnatal, but you are also providing, maybe even without saying it, this opportunity to dial into mental, emotional wellness, which sometimes it's not the priority topic. And yet you and I both know that it really needs to be. And I think this guides us into what I want to speak to you next on. Like I said, you have your finger on the pulse of all things that are truly important in this lifetime. And that takes us into a conversation on mental health. I think you and I have worked together now for a number of years, but I think the most significant work that we've done in natural health, this is my opinion, I know you've done all kinds of different things, has been elaborating on and giving people tools that support mental, emotional wellness. Because for so long, it has either been forgotten about or just somehow left behind, not given the consideration that it deserves. And I wonder if you could speak to the importance of this and specifically how it relates to the work that you do, and maybe even give us an idea of how it specifically relates to where you're living in the world. How does it amid the topic of mental health influence Indian culture? I would love to know that. And I'm sure our listeners would love to know that as well.
Yeah. So I think the mental health, the retreats that we've been doing, you had actually started the first retreat that we had experienced. And then I think we just kind of piggybacked off of that and continued to build from there. And it was such an inspiration for you to do like the mental health retreat that you had done, as well as the sleep retreat, which I think all of those are interrelated and correlated for our overall well-being. And I don't think people realize as much that mental health is not a stigma or a taboo topic. It is our everyday well-being, whether it is us being happy on a day-to-day basis, us getting enough sleep, us having a good immune system. All of those interrelate into our mental health, whether we like to tag that health word with it or alongside, because I know some people will like to call it mental fitness or mental wellness, but it's all impacts ourselves and our well-being from our inside out. And that's one of the biggest things where in India, I have found with the youth as well as the elderly, that it is still a stigma that needs to be changed. So that perspective needs to completely shift, where I think as soon as someone says, okay, is your mental well-being unstable, or I'm just not feeling well today, or I'm feeling very emotional, people aren't taught to express their emotions, or they're basically told, if you show me your emotions, I'm going to disregard them, number one, as like maybe an option, or ignore them, or basically tell you that you're acting ridiculous, or basically providing judgment on you. And that's like a few of the areas that when someone does try to speak up about it, those are the reactions that they get. And I think that perspective needs to change, where I had actually just done the podcast recording that I have coming out is with the NAS Project, where they are two girls that are in high school, I guess you would still say high school, so they're under 18, that have put this project together for youth because of the fact that mental wellness is such an important topic. And in India, it's something that people don't talk about enough. Schools don't talk about it enough, because in India, the education system is still very much of the mindset that your marks and your numbers that you're producing is what value you portray. And that's something that definitely needs to shift, because that is not who you are. That doesn't define who you are. People are so much more than a number. And I think that definitely needs to change, where people need to start saying that it's okay to talk about mental wellness. It's okay to say, I may be first in my class, but I'm struggling with other emotions due to me being first in my class. So I think it's a big shift, and it's a lot of work that needs to be done. But I know that we are collaborating with other people that are doing similar work to continue to do more retreats, to educate them that it isn't something taboo, or it's not something negative. It doesn't have like a negative connotation with it, because I know like people that I've invited to previous retreats, the parents will say, okay, well, my kids don't need it. They're not going to experience it. Our family's healthy. And I think by not even giving your child the opportunity to do that, because when we talk about peer pressure is a big thing, and the big thing that affects all children as well as all adults, especially as to what we're seeing right now going on in our world with peer pressure. It is basically a lot of peer pressure saying, okay, what's going on in your life? What's happening? What are you doing? How are you doing it? And that takes a toll on people's mental health, whether they realize it or not. And it's also another thing is like in India, I don't read the newspapers anymore because they're so depressing. It's not just depressing, but it's like so much negativity that you're absorbing into. And it is scary. Like every time I would open up the newspaper, like there would be like pages of like rapes happening or like things happening to like younger children that are like 3, 4 years old. And these are things that, why are you filling your mind with all of this? So that's like the biggest thing is like, I don't typically read a newspaper in India because it's so, I guess it's detrimental to my mental health and my mental well-being that I don't feel like putting that into my system. So I think a lot more people need to be mindful as to what they're ingesting through what they're seeing, what they're reading, what they're taking in, and start shifting that and start talking about it more. Because I know people don't like to address these topics. They like to push everything under the rug and say, okay, that's like one of the things with a lot of elderly is like, if we don't talk about it, it's just going to disappear. And that's not the case. That's not the case. It's very opposite to that, where it just kind of builds and builds and builds. And then it can either lead to resentment. It can lead to a lot more emotional turmoil. And I think it's just finding different ways to address it. And whether that be through fitness, whether that be through oils, whether that be through Reiki, there are so many different areas of life that you can use to support your mental well-being for it. So I think it's just kind of touching upon each of those and educating people on those.
I love it. And you said something that I didn't really even consider, but it makes perfect sense to me. You said that right now, well, you were speaking about the youth of India and how the concept of peer pressure exists. And you have suggested that this exists in our adult culture as well, worldwide. And I never really thought that's exactly what's going on right now because of, you know, current situations and everyone's perspective on what the right thing to do in terms of relieving ourselves from the issue of the pandemic. We are pressuring one another. And this peer pressure is happening not just in the media, but in our small, intimate groups, our friend groups, in our neighborhoods. And this peer pressure is applying undue mental stress to all of us, which can ultimately, it might not seem like it's happening to you, but when you're put in a position where you're feeling judged, shamed, pressure of any sort, that is taking or is creating an impact on your mental wellness. And I love that you call that out. And I love that when you call something out, people will pause and become more mindful about it. So I appreciate you bringing that up. I also appreciate the fact that you've given us a couple of tips on how to manage or stabilize. I'm not even sure what the right word is, but how to support, I guess, is the best word, our mental wellness. And you suggested Reiki, you suggested movement, yoga, or whatever kind of movement feels best for you in your body. And I believe that this is the right trajectory for supporting mental wellness, our essential oils. I mean, I think that's the first thing you and I probably reach for. What's easier than taking a lid off of something and smelling it and creating an impact without doing anything else besides breathing? It's a powerful thing. And I love how you have integrated this into the work that you're doing with women and supporting women and bringing new life into the world. I love how you're applying all of these techniques with your children. I know being a mom is number one priority. I mean, it all starts under our own roofs, and you apply everything that you teach to other people, you practice in your own home, which is a key thing that I'm not sure all of us do. We're very good at giving advice, but we're not excellent yet at practicing what we preach under our own roof. So I love that you have shared on that. I hope that more people, like you said, will shine a light on this topic so that we can help one another feel more comfortable just having a conversation about how you're feeling, you know, where's your head at right now? Zareen, you and the other girls on our doTERRA team were incredibly supportive of me in understanding and finding my comfort with this, because this is not an arena I wanted to be in. I did not want to talk, not because, well, I don't know what the reason was that you used the word stigma. And I think somehow that stigma attached itself somewhere in my life until I lost someone due to mental wellness issues. And it was like, okay, you either stay where you are or you find a way to move through it. And you and the girls that are part of our community were instrumental in making that happen. So I love that this is the work that you do. My goodness, we have a lot of good topics to talk about here today, but you know what? Let me guide you. Just, it feels like we're going to be taking a sharp left turn here, but really you are so focused on community and finding ways to support. You are also deeply involved in supporting the community in which you live with green initiatives, composting, recycling initiatives, things of that nature. And I think if you could shed some light on that for us, that would be really powerful. Tell us what you're up to these days.
So it's a Clean and Green Public Charitable Trust that myself and a few others have founded. And it is basically to fill the gap that we've seen in the village over the years where there just isn't a waste management solution. We're currently right now, everything is being dumped to the water side, to like the beachfront side. There's like one section. So the water is going to tell you where it needs to go. And the garbage is basically going to be pulled into the water. And then on high tides, it's basically spat back out. And it's kind of like the water's angry voice telling you, I'm going to pull it in and throw it back at you. So it is something that is very meaningful for us to be able to give something back to the community and to make sure that the village and the place where we're living is actually going to be sustained for the future and for our children and for the next generations to come, because this village has been around for years and years, for centuries. So it's also, we need to start going back to recycling and being more mindful as to the waste that we output in our lives, whether it be through plastics or through different cardboard. But that's kind of where there are a couple of different aspects with it. So there's like the waste management, where we're trying to put into play a garbage facility. So an actual waste management facility where they're able to dispose of the waste in a meaningful way, but it's also trying to educate people to not throw things on the ground. And one of the biggest ways that we've been trying to do it and we've found has the biggest impact is working with the younger schools. So the primary schools and the elementary schools and the high schools, and educating the children, because they're going to be the ones to go back and tell their parents, mommy, don't throw on the ground, or daddy, don't throw this out. It has to be recycled. So it's just kind of starting from the ground up and starting with our current generation to educate them and providing them with different incentives. So because it is a smaller village and it may not be as financially thriving, so giving them incentives of like backpacks or shoes or hats or different things for them to participate in the cleanup drives that we do. So we actually take the kids around the village and do these cleanup drives where they're actually picking up the garbage off the sides of the roads and putting it in. And we've done like tractor loads full that we're finding. But it's also, there's also a lot of animal pollution, I guess, if you could say it in that sense. Not to be negative about that, but it's also, we've had a lot of farmers that used to basically manage the cows here where they have passed, but the cows are now just roaming on the streets. So no one is there to really take care of them. So the cows are also eating garbage, taking garbages out of the garbage cans.
Oh my God.
Similar to like how in Canada you have bears and then you have like the bear locks on the bins. So we need like little cow locks kind of to protect the garbage from being pulled out. And then the dogs will either jump in or the cows will like, they'll actually like, we'll watch them like knock over the bins and stuff. And it's kind of where we need to also find other alternatives to either find open forest land that way they can go back to during the night, so that way they're not just roaming the roads for food, because you'll see them eating the garbage, you'll see them eating plastic bags. And this is where a lot of the vets will say here, even if they operate on a cow, they're going to be finding about three quarters, like how I think a cow has four stomachs, three of the four stomachs is going to basically be full of plastic and garbage. So that even if they do clean it out and operate on that cow to remove it, if they do that, the cow is just going to die because they're going to just consume more plastics again. And that's where it's such a sad state where we're trying to manage that waste management so that it doesn't go into their stomachs. It doesn't go into the animals. It doesn't go out onto the roads and then affect everyone in return. So the whole ecosystem, I guess, in return by us actually putting garbage where it belongs is the biggest thing. So that's kind of the intention for the foundation, the trust that we've created for supporting the village. And education is a big part of it, because no matter how many cleanup drives we do, if we're not educating people about it and making them aware, it's never going to change.
Serene, is this something like this charitable foundation that you're speaking about that has created this movement to the cleanup effort in the village? This is something that you inspired, correct?
Yeah. So I'm like the main founder. And then we gathered like a few of the other locals that were wanting to kind of participate in the same cause. So we have eight trustees in total for the foundation. And then we have other working members as well that are participating in it. So we're always looking for more volunteers and working members, but that's kind of where we're hoping to start. As we start having more years under us, we're hoping to get CSR funds from companies in India, where basically every larger company, if they earn a certain amount, they need to give back to an environmental cause or pay a certain percentage to the government. Mm-hmm. So this is where we're always like looking for CSR funds that are coming in or donations to come in to either buy other machinery or like another tractor to basically collect more garbage, as well as get more manpower. Because here, manpower is one of the biggest things where people think that, okay, touching garbage or picking it up is like dirty. Whereas like throwing it on the ground doesn't seem dirty to them, which kind of blows my mind. But it's like, if you pick it up and actually put it in the garbage bin, it's better for the environment. But it's also, people don't respect the people that are collecting garbage. Whereas like all over the world, mostly people that are garbage men, garbage women that collect the garbage, they earn quite a bit of money and are actually able to make a living off of it. Whereas the garbage collectors that we have right now, the financial support and I guess the community support that they have isn't really there to support them to be as optimally fit as possible. So that's kind of what we're hoping to change as well, to bring on more workers and to actually give them the respect that they deserve, because they're actually picking up all of our crap. So I think we need to show a little gratefulness to the amount of work that they do on a daily basis.
A complete mindset shift is required in that sense. And I applaud the people who are willing to do that work, knowing that they're not respected the way they deserve to be. It takes a person of high integrity to continue doing that work. What I want to comment on, and I think you and I could probably speak for a really long time on this, Serene, is I just want to point out the fact that this is monumental work that you're doing. And it's on top of everything else that you've described as being part of your natural health offering. You operate in so many beautiful ways. And I just want to remind the listeners that if you have something, this thing that you are super passionate about, that you believe needs to happen in the world, it takes one person, it takes you to inspire an initiative that would grow and have the magnitude of effect that you're describing, Serene. It takes one person to decide this needs to happen. It's not a solo project as it's executed in your village. but it takes one person to say, this needs to happen, let's go. And I just want to say congratulations and how much I admire you for being that person who has the courage to say, this needs to happen. It's truly, truly special. Who are your mentors? Like, who do you look to for guidance and people that inspire you? Where does all this goodness within you come from?
I would probably say my parents, like, I guess mentors per se. I've had mentors throughout my years of work and ones that I kind of always go back to talk about for like business stuff. But I guess the work ethic, the drive, the community has just kind of been passed down to us, because I know with my mom as well, even when we would come to India, like, we would never be staying at like 5-star hotels. We'd always be like, basically like, just like kind of hunting it out wherever we needed to be. But it was her mentality had always been like, I can move mountains. So I have seen like if someone asks her to do something, or if she gets an idea in her head, like, she will move those mountains. Like, it doesn't matter where you are in the world, she will get it done. And that's kind of the biggest thing that has always like played deeply in my heart, is like, it can happen. You just have to have the vision, the drive, and keep that positive attitude and know that the possibility is there. Because yeah, I know that's probably one of the biggest things. And she's probably one of my biggest inspirations as to just the work that she is constantly doing, as well as the love that she has behind it. And it's like always been just from the heart. There has never been any monetary incentivization or anything else behind it, other than just like a golden heart, I guess, per se.
I hope your mother gets to hear this podcast, because that might be the most wonderful thing a mother can hear, is how she inspired her daughter to continue moving the mountains. It's wonderful. We're going to be wrapping things up here shortly, Zareen. I want to make sure that the audience knows exactly how to remain in contact with you, whether their interest lies in the Belly and Beyond, or whether their interest lies in the work that you're doing with doTERRA, or whether the interest lies in your Clean and Green Charitable Trust. I want to make sure that we offer all of that up, and it will definitely be in the show notes. I want to wrap things up with this, and then I'll ask you where we can find you. But I was recently, I love listening to podcasts and conversations, and I find that there's always something to learn from people, and especially people who have lived a life, you know, like really lived their life full out. And I recently listened to a conversation between Oprah Winfrey and the late Cicely Tyson. And they were talking about this idea of legacy. And I had to listen to this conversation more than one time, because it really struck me as interesting, because Oprah, being the epic interviewer that she is, she asked Cicely Tyson what her legacy, and we're talking to a woman who has, I don't know if she was 90, she's just recently passed just this year, but I believe she was around the 90 years old mark and had really lived an incredible life. And Oprah asked her, what is her legacy? Her response floored me. And it was that you do not get to choose your legacy. You can create an intention, and you can be hopeful that your legacy will show up in a variety of ways, but you will never be able to quantify what your legacy is, because it will reach people in so many different ways that you'll never be able to fully comprehend. So, knowing that, I now ask this question to you in a little bit different way. I wanted to know what your legacy, or what you hope your legacy to be, but I think I would rather ask you, what is your intention? What are you hopeful to leave as a legacy? I know you're a mom first, but you are a passionate entrepreneur. You're a wife, you're a friend, you're a confidant, you're all of these things. So what is that lingering remembrance of you that you are hopeful to leave in this world? That's a big question, hey?
It is. I guess like the biggest thing would just be that I gave it all, like that I touched numerous people's hearts and they knew that I loved and respected them and that I was basically, I guess, just paying it forward is the biggest thing, is that I would hope that people would see that from me and then take that upon themselves and continue to do that generation after generation, is just kind of continuing that love, that motivation, that anything is possible. I think that's the biggest thing, is that anything is really possible to do, and don't set those limits for yourself.
I love it. Well, I can tell you this, you've done that for me, as I'm sure you will do for so many people listening to this conversation. It's a powerful thing to know you, Zareen. You are someone who really commits wholeheartedly, and your intelligence is profound, but I love the fact that you allow your heart to be what leads everything in your life. It's truly wonderful. So I want to make sure we know how to hang out with you in the future. Tell our guests where you like to spend most of your time so that they can begin to find those different connection points and follow your path.
Yeah. So I guess Instagram is probably the place that I'm most active on. And that is at @Zareen_Barda. And from there, I will have like all the other profiles tagged. The Belly and Beyond will start becoming more active. And then the Clean and Green has an Instagram profile. However, we're not as active as we'd hope, but that is clean.green.urvada. And that's UDVADA. But otherwise, you can follow me at @Zareen_Barda. And that's probably the best way to find me, and then go in through my Linktree bio and see all the additional links and options to be able to connect with me further.
Mm-hmm. There's so many beautiful options to stay connected to you. Choose one, choose all of them, and just follow a beautiful life being lived out to its fullest. Zareen, you are one of my dearest friends. I thank you so much for your time today. You inspire me constantly, and I can't wait for more people to get to know you and watch what's happening as your life continues to unfold in such a beautiful way. Thank you for spending your time with us today.
Thank you, Rebecca. It's honestly been a pleasure knowing you for the past 7 years and having you come across my path. So it's been a blessing.
Oh, thanks so much, my friend. Well, that's a wrap for today's episode, friends. Thank you for hanging out with us here at the Planting Wildflowers podcast. We'll look forward to seeing you again real soon. And in the meantime, if you would be so kind as to rate, subscribe, and share this podcast with others, I'd be most grateful. We'll catch you again soon. Until then, take good care.